CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, 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 morning. Alright, it's all happening live this morning. I'm just going to see if we can add Lebang, but I can't see her at all. So I don't know what's going on there. Let me take the back off. Not sure. Maybe one of the kids has unplugged one of the things. All right, so I hope you're off to a good start this Tuesday morning. We've got lots to get through and lots to get to today, including a whole bunch of interesting people that we're going to be talking to. Chief among them, none other than our own Jean-Jacques Cornish, who's always good value. We want to hear from you, so you can get hold of us on the messages. For some reason, Lebang, I can't see you. I don't know why you're not on there. Simpiwe, will you just check? Oh, I must try rejoining. Oh, okay, hang on. Well, that's gonna interrupt the flow, but let's go. Let's try it again. Bum, bum, bum. Aha, aha. There she is. Hello, Lebang.
Good morning, top of the morning.
How are you? Sorry, it was my side then. I thought it was you. I couldn't see you.
No, I could see you. I could see me. I could see clearly now. But
the rain has
here we are.
How are you?
Bum, bum. I'm good. I'm good. Well, no, let me not lie. I woke up and I found my gate half open. So I'm a little bit freaked out.
Oh, shit.
Dude, I'm like,
do you think
how is it half open? Like,
do you think you forgot to close it?
No, we literally do like a walk around every night.
Oh, shit.
Lock everything up. It's like a security company that does like the rounds. They should have like called me. Anyway, let me not make a big deal of it. I'll check the cameras before I start my day, and then I'll see who the culprit was. But I was just a little bit like freaked out. Like, how was it open all night?
Yeah, that's not cool, huh? You don't want to see that. Mm-mm. You don't want to start your day with that. That's not cool
exactly.
At all.
Exactly. Yeah, but it's all good. How are you, G?
Yeah, I'm good. I have nothing to moan about. I'm
good.
Feeling good.
Good.
The beard is coming on nicely. This is a thing that Ben Karpinski and I decided we were going to do, and it seems to be
okay.
It seems to be all right. It's coming along.
I mean, I don't see much. Zoom in.
I know. It's not. Thanks very much. I mean, it's not like the world's most impressive beard. I'm well aware of that.
I don't see any connections happening there, you know, between the chin and the ears, but I'm okay.
All right. I'm trying. It's not I'm not the world's hairiest man. So, I mean, in some ways, I suppose that's good. In some ways, it's bad.
Nah, it's all good. It's all good. Do your thing. We support you.
So what's news in the life of Lebang? I saw you and your kids on the cutest little Instagram video the other day. You had them all playing around on the sofa and stuff. And
first of all,
your daughter looks exactly like you. You know which one I mean.
Yeah, I know. I have just made little versions of myself.
You really have.
I'm very aware of that.
It's pretty wild. I mean, there is no doubting who the mom is of her in that case, especially. But it's wild, huh? You're seeing little versions of you. I mean, it must be a little bit freaky. See, I've never had kids, so I don't know how this works.
Yeah, I mean, you get so used to it because they're just there all the time. And as they get older and you start to see their features like switch up and morph into you, it's like, oh, okay, this is happening. This is really happening. But it's nice to have like little, you know, servants that I can just send around.
Little servants, huh?
Really fun. Like if anybody ever asks, why I have children, I literally can sit on the sofa and get everything done. You go to the kitchen. You go to my room and get this, and you make me breakfast. It's just, I'm cool with it. These are some of the benefits of having them.
And don't feel bad, because I remember as a kid, that was the only usefulness we had for our mother. So, I mean, it's not a problem, right? You shouldn't feel bad about this at all.
No, not at all. I grew up doing the same thing, like literally just being sent around to make tea, to do this. I think it's a rite of passage.
No.
If you're a kid, you're going to be sent around. So
it's a job.
It's their turn. It is your 9-to-5 as a child.
Right.
You're not paying rent.
No.
You are not, you know, participating in any financial activities that pertain to the benefit of the household. So do something.
You better earn your keep. Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's all good, man.
So, okay, there's quite a lot that I need to deal with today because I've got meetings and interviews and things, but I'm excited that things are, it feels to me like everything's normal again. And I don't want to get too excited about this because obviously, you know, there's a lot of stuff that, that isn't happening yet that we want to happen. But I mean, more or less, more or less it's all back to normal. You know, nobody's doing 5 days a week at the office, but I'm coming in for, like last week I was in for meetings 5 days a week. And I think I'll probably be doing four this week. So it's not too bad.
Nice.
But it's only been 4 weeks since you've been a mom and you're worried about the milk running dry. Now, I mean, is this something that you need to be concerned about?
Not
is this
really,
actually a thing that happens?
Rodeo. It's real, dude. It's very, very, very real. And in my previous pregnancy in 2021, when this happened, I never got it back. That's kind of why I'm freaking out, because I'm like, oh, I've been here before. I've got a little bit of, like, you know, post whatever trauma a little bit, because again, last time I did this, I just never got my breast milk back. But the first time this happened to me, I was able to get it back. It, dude, it's such a thing. So I just need to drink a whole lot more water. I need to eat way more. I need to
the
stop.
The factory,
like,
just, what is it, know, just closed, the factory?
It's not closed because, dude, I've been fine. But, like, Friday, something happened. There was a bit of a dip in production. You know, I think the little minions in there are striking. And they're just like, oh, yeah, we're not getting enough. No, no, the supply. No, you know. So I just need to drink more water. I just need to, like, be more, like, in my feng shui chakra zone, not stress about anything. Because if I'm good, then my body's good. Then the body will make milk, you know what I mean?
Mm.
And there's, like, little things that you can eat that will just, like, you know, sort of, like, push the production. But after this morning, I'm feeling a bit confident. I think I'll be fine. And we'll get back into the game. But a lot of it is energy related, Gareth. Like, literally, if I'm not in a good mental and emotional condition,
really?
I'm not able to produce anything, nothing at all. It's really connected to, like, a lot of different things. So I'm doing good now, so I should be good by the end of the day. I'll be back. I'll be back on the game. I just tapped out for the weekend.
It is pretty. It's fascinating what the human body is capable of. I mean, if you think about the fact that this little bubba was inside you, like learning, well, not learning. It was taking everything it needed, and yet you were still alive. And then you're like the easiest. I know it's not your first rodeo. You said so just now, but like you had the easiest whole process here. You were back doing things the very next day. You just moved house. I mean, a lot of women I know who, especially if it's their first time, it's an ordeal, man. They can't just get back into it. Were you like this on the first one?
Sort of, but that was just out of, like, fear of, like, oh, I've never done this before. And I think that's what it really is. It's all in your head for a very long time. And you tell yourself, oh, I need to sit back and do absolutely nothing for 4 months. You know, you don't have to, but
really, is that horse shit? Is that just pure laziness?
It's not laziness per se, you know, Gareth, we don't all have the same pregnancies, you know, like literally everybody has different experiences. And generally my pregnancies have been quite good to me, good to my body. After that, I can just sort of, as you're saying, just boom, get back up. A lot of ladies, not really, you know, they still have to go through some stuff or whatever the case is. But generally, those first couple of months are so crucial. I think any mom, like, we should be forced to stay home and connect with our children. We should be forced to stay home and breastfeed if we can. But
all right, so what is your feeling about the controversial issue of like the dad getting time at home? Like, what do you think of that?
I think, you know,
because you know it's controversial. Like, some people think it's nonsense.
Yes.
What do they call it? Paternity leave.
Paternity leave is maybe as important as maternity leave, and this is why. Because the child spends 9 months inside of the mother, as you're saying, doing what it's doing, blah, blah, blah. Mm. Already the mother's making a connection with the baby. Cool. Ticked off. When the baby comes out, that's when the dad can start becoming involved, whether it's bathing with the baby, whether it's, you know, like just putting the baby on the chest. That's literally just daddy time. If you miss out on those first few months of that daddy time, then it's kind of harder over time to find it. Like, sure, dad can be around and, you know, help out here and there, but he'll only be there at a distance if he doesn't sort of like get in there right from the beginning, if you know what I mean. So I'm definitely all for paternity leave. My partner's taking paternity leave on all of our children. And as a result, you kind of see the connection that they have without it being forced. It's not like, oh, you know, as a father, I need to, but he wants to, but it's his duty. He knows he was participating in the making of these babies. He's going
right.
to participate in the raising of these babies in almost the same way that I do, not in the same, you know, extent. If, you know, he can't breastfeed and stuff, but if he could, he would, you know, he would definitely participate on that level. So it's those little things where it's like, where can dad fit in now? Now that baby is actually here, because mom's already had 9 months with the baby before baby even got on earth. So it's about just seeing those little opportunities and saying, I want to connect with my kids.
No, I like that.
Yes, I'm a man.
Okay.
But, you know, let me find those pockets. It's about how you view it.
You've explained this to me for the first time, because I always, I just kind of shut up on these subjects because what the hell do I know, right? Yeah.
No, it's about your experiences at the end of the day. So if next time, Gareth, if someone says to you, "So Gareth, what do you think about paternity leave?" Now you've got a different perspective and you can say,
I was talking to an expert. I was talking to an expert and she told me, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, we've got JJ Cornish joining us a little bit later on. He's going to be talking about Africanalysis, our general flip around the continent, where we check in on all the big stories that are affecting Africa and that are important to us. We'll also be talking to S.D. Hines, who is a kickboxer and a world record holder for skipping, believe it or not. How's that? Huh? Pretty wild.
Interesting.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he's quite an interesting dude. Oh, okay. And I mean, to do kickboxing, I think skipping is like a great way to keep fit as well. But he's got the world record for skipping, which is not messing around. We've also got some other stuff coming up, including the headlines. We'll find out all about what's in the news. And we want to hear from you in the comments. So drop us a comment if you have anything on your mind. This is interesting. The pressure on moms to breastfeed at all costs, says Tracy, when it's painful or not just happening, is enormous. Mental health suffers because you're failing as a woman. Do you agree with that?
Definitely, definitely. I've got a couple of friends that send me like messages, whether it's on IG or Twitter or whatever. They always DM me like, "Oh, Lapang, you're doing this mommy thing so well. You're so good at raising your kids." And I'm like, dude, like, I don't post half of the shit that actually happens here.
Right.
You know, I'm only able to post like when we're chilled. There's times when my breasts are so sore, like just the little area where it's just so painful, but I'm not going to stop and post that. And in that moment, I feel like, crap, I'm actually failing my kid. If I don't want to put my kid on formula, because that's like, you know, if push comes to shove, but let me try harder. And it's always at the cost of my happiness and, you know, how I'm performing during that moment. And that's just one thing. What if like I wake up and like I just run out of nappies and I also don't have money to buy those nappies, for example? There's so many instances where it like it's me facing as the mom. Like I sit there and I'm like, shit, I'm not able to do this. Why did I have another baby? Oh, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And my mind just goes on and on and on. Luckily, I'm able to find solutions very quickly because mentally I'm strong, but definitely correct. And the pressure is insane. You get judged if you breastfeed. You get judged if you don't breastfeed. You get judged if you put your child on formula too quickly. You get judged if you use nappies. Why aren't you using cloth nappies?
Sure.
Why aren't you doing this? Why didn't you try that?
God.
It's a constant back and forth, especially in these first couple of months when baby's still so small. I'm getting judged right now. Why am I at work doing the show with Gareth and not in bed with my baby? You know, it's a test constantly.
And is it worse? Do you get more judgment from other moms? Because that's the big problem, right?
Yeah, so that one, have to say yes.
Yeah.
And it's sad because we all have our own methods of momming and raising up our kids and things that we believe and absorb, like the advice that we consume from the outside we never all listen to it and take it all and apply it in the same way.
Right.
You know, a group of moms will hear one thing and then some moms will be like, screw that. And then other moms will be like, yes. So if you, the screw that, the ones that say yes, you know, are going to be on your case about it. So definitely it's, and you know what's even, let me take a step further, Gareth, what's worse is the moms that are almost like only moms. Like that's all they do.
Oh, right.
Their whole lives.
They don't have a job.
Just be moms.
Mm-hmm.
No job, no hobbies outside of being a mom, no life outside of being a mom.
That's just, not healthy, I would guess. That's not healthy.
At all, because like you were yourself before you had a child. So like if you had to strip that away, what would you be? You need to still be something. So some moms just get so stuck into it. And if that's your path and you're choosing that, do your thing. But not, like, don't do it in such a way that we must feel bad for still wanting to have lives. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just one of those things. Like you have to have the mental capacity to be able to manage this thing. A lot of people just crumble and break. If you look at the rate of how many dads just sort of leave at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be a dad. Because they're just like shit scared. It's like they don't want to deal with it because it's actually quite a lot of responsibility. Can you imagine what the mom's dealing with?
Do you think, is there any real difference between having a boy or a girl? Like in terms of whether it's easier or harder?
Massive.
Really?
Massive. I mean, yeah. Boys have penises. So right from the beginning.
Oh, I didn't know that. teaching me new things here. Okay. All right.
Write this down, Gareth.
Yeah.
Like right from the beginning when you're changing nappies, like with a boy, pee's definitely going to hit your face. If you don't close your mouth, you're screwed.
Oh, no.
Literally. As they grow older, boys are just genuinely like naughtier and way more curious and doing more things than they should. Whereas girls are just kind of more relaxed. And this may sound like a huge generalization, but from my experience, I've raised two boys and this would be three girls now. And my girls are just like, they chilled, you know, they like.
Boys are hard at work. Is that what you're saying? Just say it. I mean, I'm not going to get hurt.
My boys need this and they need that. And then when they get to nursery school, the school's calling me. Hey, your children have done this. Hey, they've done that. How are my girls? Oh, no, the girls are fine. But they're boys. Like, it's crazy. But a child is a child is a child. You know, it's how you ultimately raise them. It's what you teach them is the thing, man. But it's all good. It's all love at the end of the day. Gareth, you just need to tell me what your dates are looking like. You still need to come babysit. I'm going to hold you to it. Even if it's for a few hours, it's not slowly.
Yeah. It may happen. Who knows? You know, the reason, and if anybody who's listening to this is thinking, oh, God, this is, you know, so boring. Why is Gareth asking all of this? You must understand, like, I haven't actually had anyone on the show ever who could talk about this stuff. So I'm interested in it because it's new to me. It's really, really novel. And I find it all pretty damn interesting. Like it's wild that this stuff happens and that someone like Lebung is at hand for me to answer all the questions. And I'm genuinely curious. It's not something I've dealt with before. So if you're a dad and a mom and you're listening to this going, oh, why are these guys still talking about this? It's been, you know, 4 weeks since Lebung had her baby. I mean, to me, the whole thing is just unbelievable. So I'm still getting over it, if you don't mind.
No, it's really something. And Gareth, by God's grace, when the day comes and you are ready to participate, it'll make your experience, literally you'll sit there and you'll say, I remember hearing this. Oh yeah, Lebung did say try that. It's just a community of information. You decide how you want to apply it. So I don't doubt that the day will come.
Yeah, look, I think I reserve the right to change my mind. Who knows, right? Who knows?
Is there? Yeah.
All right. So a couple of things in the news this morning that we need to look at. Let's go straight to those because there are actually things happening in the world that we need to be paying attention to. And if we don't, then you're going to be asked awkward and embarrassing questions at the coffee machine this morning and people at the office will laugh at you. So Beyonce is going to have to re-record an offensive lyric. You know, this is happening more and more. So she's released a song called Heated, which she put out last Friday. Contains a derogatory term that is often used to demean people with spastic cerebral palsy. The star's publicist told the BBC that the word, which can have a different connotation in the US, was not used intentionally in a harmful way. It will be replaced by the lyrics of something else, she said, without giving a timescale. The backlash came after a couple of weeks ago when Lizzo apologized for using the same word in her song, Girls. I think the word is either spastic or retarded. Is it?
I
see, again, they won't tell us. This drives me up the fucking wall that they won't tell us what the word is. Really?
What's the word? Oh, well, like, I mean, if people are offended, Garrett, they're probably not going to go around, you know, telling what the word
but
is.
But you can't avoid the word.
Like,
just say the word, you idiots. We're not all children.
Then if you say the word, people sing the word. And if you sing the word, people get offended. Then you as an artist who's in your realm have to go back to the studio and re-record. You have to go back and recreate.
Oh, that's the word. The word is spaz. I don't care if it offends people. I need to know what the word is. Spaz. So spaz is short for spastic. But
oh, doesn't spaz mean... Let me sit this one out.
No, but you see, like, this is ridiculous. Anyway, I mean, so Beyonce's now going, she's apologized, she's going to take it out. And now all the spastic people are saying, oh, well, glad that she got that out quickly. You know, she made the apology quickly. It's just so ridiculous. You know,
I don't know, guys.
You're not going to be able to
listen to her music.
Soon you're not going to be able to say the word tall, short, pretty, ugly. Soon it's going to get that ridiculous. Watch.
I really don't know how important it is for one single artist. I mean, even when Lizzo did this, I was like, if we start this thing of listening to everyone and now having to go back on our work just to accommodate everyone, you're never going to be able to accommodate everyone. If you don't like what Lizzo's saying, switch it off and find another artist.
And as Tracy says, once you apologize, you're earned, which is exactly right. Never apologize.
It won't stop. It won't stop. It literally won't stop. They're going to freaking scrutinize every single song. And if you freaking put a comma in the wrong place and breathe in the wrong place, you're going to have to go back to the studio and rebreathe. Sorry.
Well, let me just reiterate, because everybody in the comments is saying exactly this, and they're 100% correct. Here's what happens if you don't apologize. So you say, no, that word is staying in my song. Then a whole bunch of people who, in this case, say they have disabilities and are offended will get even more offended. And then, so what? You're not going to apologize. You move on, they move on. Right?
That's the plan. I mean, they'll try cancel you, and by cancel, they'll just, you know, type that word out over and over online. And
Correct. Literally
next week, something else will be happening.
Right.
Life will go on.
Apologize.
They shouldn't have done it.
Apologize, you're going to have to keep apologizing forevermore.
Keep it moving. Find somebody else.
It's ridiculous. Anyway. All right. So, why are people still using the N word? Is a good question from Durban Dope. If spaz is a problem. Because we know the N word is truly offensive to a lot of people.
Yeah. What we're not going to do is compare an actual, like, the N word with a word like spaz. You know, if I think that's a conversation that we just generally shouldn't be getting into, because it's completely laid and it's way different from.
But how? You see, because what people are going to ask, and this is where you, once you go down this dark path, this is what happens, is that it becomes ridiculous on all fronts.
Exactly. Yeah, let's avoid it. I think the people that perhaps should be responsible for responding to such a question are the people that use the N-word, are the people that are offended by the N-word.
Correct.
Let the people that use it, they know why. They let them, because otherwise, between myself and Gareth, however we respond,
we're just going to get into trouble.
Exactly.
I couldn't agree more. And to me, it doesn't really feature as a big deal in my life. I've been listening to rap music since I was a kid. I don't use the word. I don't think I can. That's just my opinion. You might disagree horribly. You know, let's just all just be responsible for the fact that, A, it is just language. You can decide how much or how little of it you're going to use. You can use offensive terminology if you want to, but then you must bear the consequences of that, which I'm happy to do in some circumstances, and others I'm not. And then once you've decided what your okay words are and what your not okay words are, then you just you put your peg in the ground and you're like, I will not move and I will not apologize. But I mean, it's interesting because this stuff can get so complicated, right? Anyway.
Extremely.
All right. I think every word can have different meanings. And in my view, there is a time and a place and a tone. That's a very good point, Riyadh. Very, very good point. Anyway, so let's move on to some other news, because really, I do feel like these stories are just going, they're taking us round and round. And you know, there are always going to be a group of people who are going to be offended by everything. So I really don't think it's necessary for us to get too wrapped up in this. So June the 29th was the shortest day in recorded history. Apparently there was a wobble in the Earth's spin that shaved off 1.59 milliseconds. So that's pretty interesting. It happened because the Earth isn't a perfect sphere and can wobble a little bit on its axis. So the Earth had its shortest day ever in the winter here in South Africa, thanks to a wobble in the axis. June the 29th was 1.59 milliseconds shorter than 86,400 seconds, or exactly 24 hours. In recent decades, the Earth has been more likely to slow down, giving marginally long days in the north and short in the south. If the Earth continues to speed up, this could lead to the first ever requirement to subtract a second from the incredible atomic clocks. Now, these are clocks that are able to keep time no matter what. They're based on, you know, individual particles that are thrown off of atoms. That's how absolutely incredibly accurate they are. But it is it's a particularly bizarre thing that happened this year. You wouldn't have noticed. I wouldn't have noticed. I don't know. You know, really, Lebang, are you going to notice even 1 millisecond, even 2 milliseconds?
Yeah, no.
You know, that's a it's tiny, tiny percentage.
The only time I notice that is like when I'm playing like Need for Speed and like I'm racing with these cars and like the person that comes first beats me by 1.3. I'm always like, I was so close. That is the only time. Other than that, sorry, no, sir.
Well, Durban Dope says, yeah, I was 1.59 milliseconds late for a meeting. Yeah, that's a good excuse. Good excuse. Speaking of putting pegs and putting them in places, what about Prince William and his alleged affair due to a pegging fetish? Wow, I didn't know about that. You know, the British press are so scurrilous. I wouldn't put anything past them. I don't think 90% of what you read in the British tabloids is true. Nadine says, the Earth's fanny wobble caused Bey, that's Beyonce obviously, to say the spaz word. Yeah, you can blame her, you know, her momentary lapse in wokeness for that as well. Anyway, I think it's kind of hilarious that the Earth has wobbled just a little bit. You see, even the Earth is not always stable. Even Mother Earth.
Exactly. If the Earth can't get its shit together, then who are we?
So we didn't even refer to this yesterday, but this is the most incredible and horrifying story, and we've got to give it some attention. So, you know, on Friday, there were 8 women who were gang raped in Krugersdorp while they were shooting a music video at a mine dump. They were apparently raped by these Zama Zamas. Now, following the incident, they arrested 82 men. However, none of them are facing charges and have only been charged with contravening the Immigration Act, not rape. The National Police Commissioner has said that every effort will be made to ensure the suspects are linked to the rapes. Now, I just think this is unbelievably savage. I mean, 82 men have been arrested. So far, they haven't got the evidence, but they're going to prove that at least a majority of these guys have been involved. But these 8 women were basically gang raped by 82 men, or let's call it 70 men or 60 men. Either way, it's just outrageous. And a film crew were reportedly shooting a music video in the West Village mine dump on Friday morning when men wearing blankets and balaclavas appeared and fired shots. They subsequently ordered everyone to lie on their stomachs and proceeded to gang rape 8 women and rob the crew of their valuables. Police immediately launched an investigation into 32 counts of rape, 1 count of armed robbery, arresting suspects in big batches. In total, 82 men arrested. So I don't even know what to say about this. I mean, it's just so absolutely, unbelievably vicious and senseless and savage. So apparently forensic laboratories are working nonstop to identify the rapists. They're obviously going to have to take samples, run them up against the DNA of the alleged rapists. And the investigators are apparently going to make every effort to ensure that the arrested suspects are linked to the gang rape. So last night, it came out that the ANC had their conference, right? And Lindiwe Sisulu suggested something. Now, far be it for me to think that she is someone we should be taking advice from in any front. But she did suggest this, and I suddenly thought, you know, let's not be silly about this. I actually think this might be a good idea. She's suggesting the chemical castration of rapists. Now, before everybody jumps around and starts going, oh, well, that's barbaric. We live in a modern, civilized democracy where that kind of thing is unheard of. What did you say?
Do it.
Do it.
Do it. Do it. If 80 men, plus minus, are going to confidently walk into a space and say, there's 8 young women at work and some crew members doing their job. Let's fuck it up for them. Let's ruin their lives right now because we can. Mm-hmm. And almost know that they can get away with it because of how poorly rape is generally treated in this country. Do it. Let's just do it. Do it. I am so appalled, Gareth, at firstly the reaction of, you know, men in general. After the story came out, men were like, oh, yeah, we know that they are all from Lesotho. No, they're not South African men. African men wouldn't do that.
That sounds like a nice excuse.
You already are. Let us chemically castrate whoever we need to. In this case, all 80 of those people. Let's do it. Do it. Do it. Just do it.
See, I heard this. It was proposed at the ANC's policy conference. And I thought, I know what the reaction is going to be, right? From two different groups of people. There are going to be a bunch of people who say exactly what you just have. And then they're going to be a group of people who say, oh, no, no, that's not, you know, what civilized people in a civilized country do. But can we call ourselves a civilized country if we have something? I mean, if this was in any other country in the world, this would be front page news for weeks.
Yes.
Am I right? For weeks.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
How is it that this is allowed to happen in our country, and yet we pretend that we've got this facade of, you know, being a civilized, world leading constitutional democracy, blah 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 blah? Clearly not. Clearly, there are a lot of things that we still have to sort out. And I'm thinking, if it is the case that South Africa is the kind of country where something appalling, truly appalling like this can happen, can we keep calling ourselves this? And does Lindiwe Sisulu have a point?
Mm.
And should we be considering this? Now, I know lots of very reasonable people like you, Lebang, who think, hell yeah, let's do this. I think that's a good idea. And you know, I mean, Riyadh is saying here, I'm disgusted. The point we need to ask is how a human being becomes so full of hate to even have a thought of doing so. I say hang them by their balls till they fall off. You see, I think, again, you know, here, someone says, parallel parking says, take them to a butcher and get the job done right. Should we not be concerned that the police will prove them guilty? They do not have a very good track record. See, that's also true, what Christina's saying, is some of these guys may not have participated in any of this, but they'll all be found guilty because now the police are under pressure to find people guilty. All these ministers should shut up, says Lito. The chemical castration just reduces the sex drive, reduces. Does a rapist have to be in the mood? Can't see how this type of castration would assist. But maybe it'll be...
What do you suggest, Lito? What do you think we should do when South Africa is the rape capital of the world?
But maybe...
Let's open the floor to suggestions.
But maybe, Lebang, it would also be... you know, something that would make people think twice about whether they're going to do that or not. Wouldn't that be a good enough reason
Look,
to do it?
Look, at this stage, we'll take anything.
A deterrent.
I'm just saying at this stage, we should be willing to take anything, dude. Like, we are down. We are at the bottom as a country when it comes to the concept of rape. People that rape get away with rape most of the time. It's just exhausting. And it's always the same reaction. It's, oh, my God. Sure, what are we going to do? You see, what I like about this is that it's a different solution. It's something different. It's not
Come up at a political party conference is either desperation, and it could be that, because also someone like Lindiwe Sisulu is probably more interested in, you know, getting popularity points. So we know that. We can see through that. But look at how angry people are. I mean, I can tell from the comments it's exactly half and half the people are in the mood for this. And the other half are like, no, no, no. I mean, look at Carl says, research shows that chemical castration does not reduce sexual violence. I wonder. And I knew even bringing it up this morning when I heard about it last night, I was like, oof, even bring this up is going to cause huge trouble. But there it is. So now you know that is something they're actually thinking about. I think it was declined as an actual policy idea, but it came up and it got lots of attention over the course of the last few days. Elon Musk's dad says he's not proud of his son. The whole family has done a lot of things for a long time. So the dad says,
douche.
So Errol Musk said in an Australian radio show he wasn't proud of his billionaire son. He said that the family's done lots of things, and he added Elon has really surpassed the mark. Errol and Elon's younger brother, Kimball, says that Kimball's his pride and joy. Not Elon. How's that, huh?
Does he have any comments on, getting into a relationship with his stepdaughter? Can he tell us how that's affected his mental abilities and instabilities? Come on, dude. Sure, you've all done good, but I mean, your son's a freaking... It's Elon Musk. If Elon Musk was my child, Gareth, do you understand? Are you aware? My son is Elon Musk. Have you seen how proud his mother is? Like, his mother freaking... Yes, she puts him on a pedestal on Twitter, as far as we're allowed to see. You know, but I don't know. It's just a bit weird for him to be like, yeah, well, it's just another Thursday. Yeah, he sounds like a bit of a douchebag to me.
I mean, this could also be one of those situations where he was talking about all his kids, and he's like, yeah, I'm proud of all of them, not especially Elon. And then they take it out of context, and they're like, he's not proud of Elon. That could have happened. Does sound like he's more proud of his other son, though. I mean, apparently they are all tremendous. Yeah. They're all like very, very big overachievers. I mean, it's how lucky is he as a dad that he can say, all of my kids are successful. Isn't that cool?
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty dope.
So I'm thinking,
why wouldn't he just...
I'm thinking it's probably the press playing it up for ratings.
Well, it worked.
That's here what we I are. Think. Let's turn our attention to far more important issues. We're going to go local with JJ Cornish, and we're going to go continental with him too. It is time for Africanalysis. Africanalysis is, of course, brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School, where we look at what's happening around the African continent. And here he is, live this morning to take us through some of it. JJ Cornish, how are you?
Bonjour, I'm immensely well, thank you. How kind of you to ask.
It's always good to see you. And JJ, we love to hear what you can tell us about things that are going on the continent. Where should we start today? Should we start with climate change, which seems to be all the rage everywhere at the moment?
Well, you know, we're told as Africans that we're going to be hit the worst. And this is a depressing piece. African savanna elephants in Kenya. Mm-hmm. Are more in danger from climate change than they are from poachers. Now, that's an endangered species.
Really?
You know, Kenya started with something like 135,000 elephants, and that went down to 16,000 by 1989. That's because of poaching. Today, there are about 36,000. But in the last 8 months, something like 179 of those elephants have died from drought. Died of thirst.
Jeez.
And nine have been poached. So, you know, it's quite a factor in difference. You know, an elephant needs 200 liters of water a day. So, you know, what do you do when there is a drought like this? You know, the drought in Kenya, in Ethiopia, in Somalia has affected 15 million people, put them in danger of starvation, and has killed 3 million livestock. Now, do you say, well, we're going to have to do the same with elephants? But it's just yet another indication of how badly we are hit by climate change, how badly we in Africa are hit, the least polluting continent, and one of those that are hit the worst. So it's just a depressing story.
It is. It seems so unfair that we should have to bear the brunt for all these other countries. And I mean, chief among them, let's not mess around here, because a lot of countries are pulling their weight, but China just doesn't seem to give a damn. I mean, it's not a hidden piece of information that China has just done absolutely zero to even tackle this climate change thing. They don't sign on to any of the accords. If America got their net carbon emissions down to zero, which they keep threatening to do, it still wouldn't make any difference because China's so far ahead in terms of their carbon emissions. And here in Africa, I mean, we're the biggest. Aren't we, South Africa, the worst polluter on this continent?
I would think so. I mean, we'd probably give a nod to Nigeria too. But yes, now we certainly are. When we hosted the climate summit, do you recall that? We were very careful not to say that we were going to get rid of carbon emitting energy sources, coal, for example.
Yeah.
You know, if we stopped using coal right now, we'd be in real trouble in terms of our power generation.
Absolutely.
Hang on, Gareth, hang on, stick around a minute. We are in real trouble with our coal, with our power.
Correct. I was going to say, what are you talking about?
I don't know what I was thinking.
And it's just not it's just not realistic for us to think any other way at the moment.
No, absolutely not. What, solar power? I don't know.
Come on.
Poppy power. There isn't an alternative. Wind power. You know, wind power around Parliament, if you put a wind turbine there, you'd get a fair bit. You could light up the Victoria and Albert waterfront with the hot air that comes out of that shop. But, even though they're getting cheaper, they're still more expensive than coal. And at the moment, we're using it. And so we are the greatest emitter. And I think, you know, we've got to think that we've got to change it. But everywhere, when you mention China, you know, when I first started visiting China back in 95, I was absolutely horrified at just how completely unaware they were of any environmental impact of what they were doing. If there was a hill in the way of their building a factory, mm-mm. Well, that hill would go.
Yeah.
You know, that's and they were sort of proud of the fact that they could do that. Today, they seem to be more sensitive to it. But, you know, the proof of the pudding would be signing on to agreements, accepting agreements, and they're nowhere near there yet. But it's the countries that have made it that have polluted. And so, you know, those countries like India coming up saying, well, you know, we haven't yet, we're still in a development process. Yes, we are polluting, but we need to get up to the level that you are at. And that's something that China's arguing to an extent. So it's a very sad state of affairs, and that our pachyderms in Kenya should be suffering is even more heartbreaking.
It also seems to me that a lot of excuses are being offered by governments, you know, and they love a story like this because they can say, oh, we're killing the elephants, so we've got to tax you more. Which, of course, makes no difference to the climate. It does make a difference to the government's bottom line, though, in every country. They're like, oh, but the elephants are dying, so we need to tax you more. Sounds perfectly reasonable, doesn't it?
It certainly does. But how many times am I going to tell you, Gareth, that you way too young to be so cynical?
Well, that's why we get you on here, to bring down that, the cynicism.
Bring down the level, yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely.
All right, so let's talk about some other things that are going on here, because there's quite a lot on the agenda. Apparently, the Congo is the place at the moment when it comes to news. So,
well, yes, you know,
there's a lot of oil exploration happening there, and when we talk about, you know, damaging the climate and the environment, but you know, the Congo has for a very long time been a source of, you know, it's one of the few ecological areas that has largely remained intact, and now that's being threatened.
Well, there is. There are 27 blocks that they're allowing oil exploration to occur, and three of those are at the coast, but nine of them are in rainforest areas. Now, these rainforests are what are called carbon sinks, and they have vast amounts of carbon that has been undisturbed for centuries. And once they start drilling and getting at it, they will release that carbon, and it'll have a huge impact globally. But in order to get the drilling equipment to these places through the rainforest, they're going to have to cut huge corridors to allow heavy equipment to get through. So it's going to be very, very damaging. And people are saying to the Congo, please don't do that.
Mm.
But Congo is saying, you know, our people are starving. What do you expect us to do if we've got oil underneath our ground?
Sure.
What is the priority? Is it our people or is it the rainforest? So it's that sort of argument. You mentioned the Congo being in the news. A terrible thing happened in eastern Congo, and I know that place well because I was there several times as an election observer. But a couple of troops, or some troops, in fact, it turns out that they are Tanzanian, and I breathed a sigh of relief when I heard it was them and not South Africans, because there are South Africans also there, returning from leave, and they come across a border post, and there's a long queue. They go to the front of the border post. There's an argument. There's some shots fired. And the peacekeepers, the blue helmets, actually killed two people and wound 20 of them. The UN boss, Antonio Guterres, outraged. The Congolese have made some arrests. Clearly, those peacekeepers are going to be sent home where they have to face justice. But there have been problems, real problems, actual peacekeepers dying in the Eastern Congo from Congolese who are arguing that these guys are not doing enough to actually protect them. It was once the largest peacekeeping force on the planet, and it certainly is still the one among the most expensive, but the locals are saying, you're not protecting us, and so they're protesting, and their protests have turned violent. So there's this kind of daggers drawn attitude between the peacekeepers who were supposed to be there, sure, to protect the people, and the people themselves. It's very dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, when you lose trust in the peacekeepers, then there's not much peace to be kept, is there? You've seen this story unfold before.
Yeah.
So, JJ, I mean, what is the situation in the Congo at the moment? Because the last time we checked in there, they were in a state of pretty much anarchy. Who's in charge? What's going on? Is there any kind of local control? We know that there's always been tension, particularly in the east of the Congo. I mean, is that still the case?
Still is, and the East African community, where and Congo has just joined them, are sending in troops. That's what they've got to do. But then the Congolese are saying, if you send in troops, make sure you don't send in any Rwandans or Ugandans, because Rwanda is, of course, charged with fomenting the violence there by supporting the rebel groups. And so it's a mishmash, and we do have Anthony Blinken going there in a short period of time. He's coming here first, then going on to the Congo, and then going on to Rwanda. You know, I'm being criticised for being too critical of Rwanda, but what Paul Kagame is up to is absolutely shameful, and you know what he's done. I mean, I think he perpetrated a violence and I mean, the word genocide, I don't use it lightly, but it looks like a mass killing of Hutus once he came to power. You know, once the real genocide there ended, there was a sort of a retribution against the Hutus, and that went on. And then getting people, the Hutus who fled into Congo, getting them back and what they did to them in the Congo. So, Gareth, if I paint a picture of absolute confusion, then I'm doing my job. I mean, it really is.
That's what it is.
A sad, sad state of affairs.
So, JJ, I mean, with all of this, you know, a lot of people asking, is there any end in sight for the Congo? I mean, is there any way that we could bring stability there? I mean, we talk about the African Union. We talk about the UN peacekeeping force, the Blue Helmets you just mentioned now. Is all of this for naught? Is there a way that we could bring lasting peace to the Congo? Because since it almost seems like Mobutu Sese Seko was the last time that they had real peace. And that's saying something, because we know what a crook he was.
Yeah, the word kleptocrat was actually invented for him.
Yeah, he famously have like a whole bunch of Swiss bank accounts, and some of them we've never even discovered that they're his, and the Swiss don't even know whose is whose.
Well, there's still a lot of money to come back from him, there's no doubt.
Yeah.
But the Congo is still one of the five countries. In the book, I'm nearly finished now. Mm. The Congo is one of the five countries that will transform Africa. And I maintain that through all the trouble they're having. They have this capacity. And I think as we bring that to sort of their realization of their potential, the hydropower that they could provide virtually to the whole continent, the fact that they could virtually feed the whole continent. I mean, we said that about Zimbabwe at one point, and that didn't seem to help. But I do believe that the Congo will change, and just by sheer force of continental solidarity, it's got to change. That's what ended the Africa's world war in the Congo. So, I have to say, sometimes I close my eyes and wonder why I have faith, but I believe that the Congo will transform, and that it will have an absolutely major impact on the transformation of Africa.
Well, I mean, JJ, from your mouth to God's ears, right? That's all we can hope for. I wish I had I wish I had the faith that you do, but I'm looking forward to that book. When is it coming out?
Well, I don't know when it's coming out, but when it leaves my desk and goes into the publisher's hands.
Still writing.
I'm still editing and rearranging the jigsaw, as it were. You know, I've got all the pieces, all the words, but I'm rearranging I'm arranging them, and that's taken more time than I thought. I'd hoped to be finished a month ago, and I'm still going.
Listen, it's never easy writing a book. I mean, you're so worried that if you put out something that isn't exactly right, and you haven't put in the requisite amount of attention, you're never really sure when it's finished. So it can be frightening. JJ, let's just talk for a minute about Burkina Faso and about Mali, if you don't mind, because those countries are also in complete disarray at the moment with these jihadi killings. Is this the Boko Haram group still in West Africa?
Well, it's the Al-Qaeda in West Africa. The fact is, now, Burkina Faso and Mali, they could not contain these jihadi killings. The people were up in arms. So the military took advantage in both those countries, in Mali back in 2020, in August, and in Burkina Faso in January this year. The military took the opportunity to take over, saying, government can't do the job, but we'll have to do it. And a very interesting group called the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project, ACLED, they said, and they've done a very detailed study of this, and they say, no, it hasn't been the case. In both these countries, there have been actually more killings since the coups than there were before. So, we had the Algerian president, Tebboune, saying just yesterday to Mali, please return to legality, in other words, democracy, have elections as soon as possible. Both of these military coups, both of the leaders said, we will have elections, and they put a target date, and in both cases, they have exceeded that target date. They're holding on to power, and that's what the military does. That's the danger of a military coup, is that they take over, and then things work, and then they get a taste for the power. And they don't, you know, other things have to force them to give it up to restore democracy.
That's when we call them a junta, right?
Yes, indeed. Or in private, even other things.
All right. Well, I mean, it sounds a little bit messy at the moment. We really try to look for trends. And I'm always hoping that at least most of Africa is moving in a positive direction. This morning's news, I'm afraid, is not good all round.
Well, there isn't, you know, and I do try. I do look for sort of positive trends, but I have to say I have a soupçon of sadness here.
Hey, we don't make the news.
A tray of tragedy.
We're not responsible for the news, JJ. You're just here to report it. That's all. So that's why we like checking in with you. You're never going to bullshit us.
I hope that's the case.
No, it's always true. We look forward to that book, and keep us informed as to how the progress is going. JJ Cornish is brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School. You can find out more if you want to listen to every previous episode of African Analysis. They're all there available to you. You can get a nice look at the entire story as it unfolds over time. And of course, JJ will be back in a couple of days' time to give us some more updates from all over the continent. But thank you very much, JJ. Good to see you.
Lovely being with you.
Very good. Lebang and I will be here to take care of you for the next hour. Stick around. CliffCentral.com. It is Tuesday morning. CliffCentral.com.